On December 3rd, 2001, the largest bankruptcy to that date in United States history was filed. 10,000 people lost their jobs. Many more lost their retirement and life savings. In total, $25 billion was lost. This is that story. Not of the CEO or the CFO, not of the board of directors, but of the real people, the people on the front lines, people like me.
America wasn't settled. America was conquered. Those pointy-headed teachers of yours are dead right about that. Brave, tough men came down here to Texas. They drove out the Comanche and they drove out the Mexican. They fought the wolf and the weather and the limestone. They made this country their own. Why the hell they wanted the godforsaken place, I'll never understand, but they wanted it. So they took it.
Hey, Mr. Blue.
Hey, there he is.
How are you, sir? Good to see you.
Growing up in Houston, my life was about Star Wars and Saturday morning cartoons. Comic books and superheroes. All were epic battles between good and evil.
This is America. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You see something worth taking, you just take it.
Brian, what are you and Mr. Blue discussing so seriously over here?
America.
It's a good day for that. Come on, let's go see what's cooking on the barbecue.
The Crooked E, the unshredded truth about Enron.
So, I heard you're leaving Texaco after all these years. What the heck are you thinking?
I'm thinking I want to be rich, Teddy boy, filthy, stinking rich. There's never been a better time than now. Thank you very much. Reagan in the White House, tax cuts, deregulation. There's only one rule these days, old buddy. There are no rules.
No rules, no limits. I knew right then what I wanted.
The Rover!
Come on, the fireworks are starting.
Bernie Biggers, you get over here right now.
This is my story. My own personal battle between good and evil.
A boy looks into the distance. 15 years on, March 2001, Houston, Texas.
We're looking at another beautiful day, probably about 85 degrees, with humidity in the upper 70% range. Bill's got a special guest in the studio with him. What do you got with you, Bill?
A fresh-faced young couple in their early 20s sit together sifting through their post.
Bill. Modern bride.
My mom got us a subscription.
She's pretty with long shoulder-length hair. She grabs the magazine. He stops sifting at an envelope marked Enron and stands up.
Oh, my God.
What?
It's here. Oh. 4 years of college and 3 years of business school, hundreds of books and thousands of hours. And it all comes down to this.
He sits next to her. She playfully snatches the letter from him.
I just want you to be happy, Brian. Are you sure this is what you really want?
Slim, dark-haired Brian leans in and kisses her. He reaches behind her for the letter. He reads the typewritten letter. She smiles at Brian and pushes him over. Houston's futuristic skyscrapers are bathed in early morning light. Brian's in a blue shirt and yellow tie driving a car. He peers up at a modern curved glass skyscraper. A caption, April 1st, 2001, Enron stock $55.70, rising. Brian drives his blue SUV into the Enron underground car park. A moving sign above him scrolls, Enron is innovative. Brian smiles in awe. Another sign, Enron is ambitious. Brian's laughing. A third display scrolls, Enron is bold. Now in the building, Brian, in a sober suit, rides an escalator into a plant-filled atrium. People around him are open-necked and casually dressed. Brian slides off the yellow tie and drops it into a large stainless steel waste bin. He pulls down the collar wings of his shirt and falls in line with other employees passing through security. He swipes his card and passes by the guards who were blocking his way. An Enron video shows in the lift.
Hello, Enronites. It's Mr. E here on ETV with more Enron news of note. Last week, Wall Street analysts were singing the praises of the mighty E and our latest earnings, which put us on pace to realize an astounding $240 billion in revenues this year. That'll make Enron number one in the Fortune 500. Incredible.
Welcome to Enron, y'all. I'm Amber St. Pierre, your personal personnel representative. Congratulations! You are now part of America's seventh largest company and its finest. Mm-hmm. In 1985, two natural gas companies merged to form Enron, creating a pipeline system that touches every corner of these continental United States. After conquering America, Enron went global, establishing power plants over in England, India, China, the Philippines, and South America. But Enron is about more than just energy. We're innovators, creating and commoditizing new markets in water.
It was like finding paper, out you were going to play center field for the Yankees. Metal, these guys, they were the best of the best.
In fact, these virtual assets now account for 80% of our total business.
Virtual assets? What is she talking about?
To ensure our financial integrity, Arthur Anderson auditors work right here in the towers, available for guidance whenever the need arises. Now, let's meet the man most responsible for making Enron what it has become.
She presses a remote. Kenneth Lay, chairman of the board.
At Enron, we believe in RICE. Respect, integrity, communication, excellence. Enron is a company that deals with everyone with absolute honesty and fairness. We play by all the rules. We stand by our word. We want our clients to leave an Enron transaction believing in our integrity and truthfulness.
Andrew Tillman, Harvard undergrad, first in our class at the University of Texas Business School, and now he and I are equals.
On the video, a caption, Jeffrey Skilling, Chief Executive Officer.
Jeff Skilling, the man at the forefront of Enron's success.
Every year, every week, every day, we have to come up with new ideas. What it ultimately comes down to is our customers. Customers who view us as a unique resource. Customers who are counting on us to make their lives better.
As a company, we deal with absolute integrity. We play by the rules, stand by our word. That's the Enron way.
Chairman and CEO smile at each other. The Enron logo appears.
Alrighty, now let's talk about employee stock options and bonuses.
He emerges from the seminar.
Hello, Carruber.
Bernie Bickers, my best friend from when I was a kid all the way through business school. Now working on Wall Street as an energy analyst.
Bernie.
I just got done with Enron orientation.
Indoctrination into the cult of the crooked E. Little advice, dude. Do not take the brown acid. All right. Well, tell me, is it everything that's heart desired or what?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's in a lift.
Better than I ever imagined.
Brian emerges from the lift and stops, awestruck by the hive of activity on the trading floor in front of him, as people scurry about purposefully or huddle together in conversation. Attaché case in hand, he proceeds along a corridor, breathing in the atmosphere around him. He passes a sign saying natural gas. Graphs and charts adorn the walls. He stops briefly by a desk where four men deliberate around computer monitors, the Arthur Anderson Enron audit team. Two of them are discussing golf. He approaches a man fixing a sign marked bankruptcy.
Excuse me, sir. Hi, I'm looking for the division manager here. Can you tell me where Greg McClaney is?
You found him.
Oh,
hey. You must be Culver.
Kruver. Brian Kruver.
Yeah, welcome to bankruptcy.
Thank you.
The latest in Enron's never-ending attempt to take over the universe. You are going to be working on Team J. Anna Marie? Sorry. Can you grab that? Thanks. Oh, this is Anna Marie, by the way. She's, sorry, what do they call you people now?
Administrative assistant, grade 2. Translation secretary.
Right, yeah, Anna Marie's been with Enron 4 years, but she's leaving in the fall to start college full-time. Great. Good for you.
Hi, I'm Brian.
He passes awkwardly between Anna Marie and Greg.
This is Welling, head of the division, my boss. You never speak to him.
Greg passes a toolbox to Anna Marie, then leads Brian to a busy open-plan office.
Here's the rest of the team. You got Lazari, he's an originator. He lines up the customer.
Don't give me, I'll get back to you later. Later, well, I'll be dead, right?
That's what you're going to be doing.
You're not dead.
And then you got Duffy right there. Okay, he's your trader. After you and Lazari line up the customers, it's up to Duffy to close the deal. And we've got Liz Perry, and she handles the team's public relations.
We have our own PR person.
At Enron, perception is everything. Hey, everybody. Guys. Hey, guys. Hey, this is Brian Kruger. He's going to be working with us as of today.
A couple of people glance over, disinterested. Most don't hear.
Look,
They're still a little peeved. The team is supposed to have input on all new hires, and I got the name wrong. Yeah, they wanted some Harvard guy, Andrew Tillman, and but, you know, now you're here, so don't worry about it.
Brian's now seated at his desk. He looks round, laughing.
April Fool's Day. I got it.
Sorry. Welcome aboard, Culver.
Greg leaves, and Brian's expression becomes more somber. He notices Lazari throw him a hostile glance. Brian opens his case, removes a baseball, and places it on the desk in front of him. It's evening, and Brian returns home. Courtney's working at a keyboard.
Hey, honey.
Ah, the conquering hero returns. How was your first day?
I have no idea how the business works. I have no idea what I'm going to be doing. All my coworkers hate me, and my boss told me I was hired by mistake.
Very funny. April Fool's, right?
He grins and swigs at a beer. The Enron elevator video runs.
And Chairman Lane met with Bush officials on the important issue of deregulation of the energy markets. Continuing Enron's history of pitching in to assist our nation's leaders, Enron is proud of its many contributions to our Congress, our governors, and most of all our president. Even lending Mr. Bush our corporate jet when he needed it most. Keep flying high, Mr. President.
Greg.
So, like a lot of divisions here, we are marketing something that nobody ever thought they needed before. Bankruptcy protection. So let's say you own a factory, all right? You're making cups, perfect. Paper cups, Kruger cups. Now you're a small operation, you employ about 100 people, you're doing just about okay. When you get a call from Lazari Coffee Company, makers of the finest coffee in the world.
He gulps at what was Brian's cup of coffee.
Now, Lazari tells you that he is opening up a national chain of coffee houses and he wants you to be his exclusive cup supplier. That's great news, right? I mean, you just increase your business tenfold. So you convert your factory to make only Lazari cups. You open 6 more factories. You hire 2,000 new workers. You buy that $16 million penthouse overlooking Central Park. Life is good!
Everyone grins.
Until one day, you pick up the paper and you read, Lazari coffee is contaminated with toxic waste.
Lazari stares into his cup.
Well, within a week, Lazari closes his 2,000 branches and declares bankruptcy, leaving you with $20 million in debt and 6 warehouses full of useless Lazari coffee cups. Kruger Cups is dead.
Ouch.
Greg crushes the plastic cup.
But that's where Enron comes in. Because, see, for an annual fee, Enron agrees to insure a business against the bankruptcy of its major customers, suppliers, and debtors, so that if they go under, the insured won't have to.
He looks round the table.
Any questions?
Just one. What happens if Enron goes bankrupt?
The questioner's joking.
All right. Get out of here. Go make some money. Let's go.
Make some money. That was easier for some than others.
Hi, Brian Kruger from Enron.
Yeah, so sorry. Just tell him I'm calling him with the deal.
Yes,
he's going to get him his next promotion. Glad to hear you.
Hi, Brian.
All the kids, good? Yeah. Well, listen, if we just...
No, this is not telemarketing call. This is Brian Kruger from Enron.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. That is why you're going
to... What I was calling for, I'd like to go over...
Don't give me, I'll get back to you later.
No.
Later we'll all be dead, okay? Excellent.
If I could just go over...
That's why you're going to be a rich man. Look, I'll get my peeps to meet your peeps. We'll do this whole meet and greet.
I understand.
Okay, Adam, you're a rich man.
Bye-bye.
Brian crosses out another name on his list. Lazari.
I am the king. 6 deals in play, and it's not even 11 yet. It's almost too easy.
Brian sees Greg's boss looking at him and quickly looks away.
How's lunch with your mom?
Terrific. All we talked about was the wedding. She's totally cool with us wanting something small. And just family and a few friends. Brian, I was thinking, since my dad just retired and since my parents are still putting Jason through school, it'd be really nice if we could pay for the wedding ourselves. What do you think?
Sounds great.
His mood becomes somber. The Enron skyscraper.
And in national news, Enron Chairman Ken Lay met with Vice President Cheney to discuss the energy crisis in California. Chairman Lay serves on President Bush's energy advisory team after having raised more than $100,000 for the president's campaign.
I think you should take a look at this, really.
Brian's at his desk.
Okay.
Well, thanks anyway. All right, bye-bye.
Brian wearily removes his headset. From his office, Greg's watching and picks up the phone.
Kruger.
How's it going?
Oh, great.
Good to hear. Listen, personnel called. They just want some information for your peer review form.
Okay.
Liz comes over.
What the hell's a peer review form?
Oh. See, twice a year, every employee is evaluated by his coworkers. Now, if you end up in the bottom 15%, well, you automatically get redeployed. Don't ask. Lunch? I'm thinking Italian.
I'm in.
Zari?
Zari, you never come.
Brian watches his colleagues grab their jackets and head out with Liz. He sits alone on a wall outside the building, munching a sandwich. A sleek, black stretch limo pulls up close by. The chauffeur in dark glasses, a grey-haired portly man, and some other men emerge. With a look of recognition, Brian hurriedly wipes his mouth, gets up and walks over to the grey-haired man. The chauffeur tries to hold Brian back.
Mr. Blue, sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Hi. I don't know if you remember me.
Sure, you're Ted Kruger's kid. Brian, isn't it?
Yeah.
Last I heard about you, you were at business school at UT.
Yeah, but I'm here now.
Well, apparently. What do you think so far?
Sir, it's the president of Guatemala.
Tell him I'll call him back. Guatemala and their damn blackouts. One of these days, we're just going to cut them off. I'm going to have somebody from my office call you, though. We'll get together, all right?
Oh, I would love that. Good. Thanks a lot.
All right. Good to see you.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on a second. We'll just be a minute.
Mr. Blue leads Brian away from the men waiting alongside him.
Listen, Kruger. Enron's the Wild West. It's deep space. It's the bottom of the ocean. There are no limits at Enron. None. Except the limit you place on yourself.
Brian's colleagues pass.
Just how far are you willing to go, huh?
Mr. Blue walks off, leaving Brian to reflect.
My father used to say Mr. Blue was a man who could get things done. No matter what the job, no matter what the cost. You take no prisoners, and you give no ground. And that was the Enron way. And I decided right then that was going to be my way, too.
He's at his desk.
Yeah, it's Brian Kruger calling from Enron. Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell him I'm calling with the deal that's going to earn him his next promotion. That's right.
April 9, 2001, stock $55.60 rising.
That is exactly why I brought that up. I mean, you got to jump on it when it gets out there. You see what I'm saying? Listen, don't you see? I am the one.
Don't make me go for more. Where do you want to go from here?
All right, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
great, exactly.
Every day I was getting better at getting results. I was more confident, aggressive, I was bold. They called it becoming Enronized, and I liked it.
Take these to Willie.
Exactly.
Hey, it's Brian Kruger again. Yeah, well, you know what they say, if you snooze, you lose.
Want to go to Y by invest?
I'm going to send some stuff over immediately.
That's right. We can do that right now.
Liz.
Wants to grab a bite.
I will.
Sorry?
He doesn't.
You coming, Kruger?
He swings round.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to drive?
You can drive.
Brian, Duffy, and Liz are in Liz's open-topped BMW.
So, Kruger, you like sushi?
Yeah, I love sushi.
Why did I say that? I can't stand sushi.
Last time we ate at this place, Andy Fastow was at the table next to us.
Great. Maybe I can throw up on someone in upper management.
An elegant Japanese restaurant.
To unlimited expense accounts.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Three of us spent $500 here last time.
Brian looks anxiously into his cup and drinks.
So, Brian, how is it that you know Mr. Blue?
Well, that explains the invite. I was not giving them the satisfaction of knowing he was just a friend of my dad.
He took an interest in a paper I did in business school and looked me up. He's actually the one that recruited me to Enron, so.
Brian nods gently.
So, what about you guys? What's your stories?
Me? I've been at Enron for 6 months. I started out in broadband, and then I heard about this new division.
And I transferred in from weather derivatives.
No, I'm not Enron. I mean, real life.
Oh. Oh, well, I'm married. I have two kids. We relocated from 12 years in San Francisco, and, just closed on a house last week.
We bought a house, too, in Sugar Land. We found it just after the wedding.
Oh, you just got married. I'm engaged.
Oh, I have the greatest wedding coordinator for you. She got us into the Fort Garry with 400 guests, including a ton of upper management. all for less than 60,000.
Brian continues to nod open-mouthed.
That's amazing. What about McClaney?
McClaney? He's a good guy. He's married. He's got 4 kids. He's been at Enron for 10 years, but he's just never really been on the fast track.
He's always heading off for a little league or soccer or peewee hockey. Not exactly career builders.
What about Lazari? What's his life like?
What life? Lazari eats, breathes, and dreams Enron.
We've been inviting him to lunch every day since we started, and he has yet to come. As far as I can tell, he lives at Enron. That guy's got a real future.
So that was it. Enron opened the door to the best of everything, but only if you were willing to give it your all.
You were going to love this, too. Oh, here it comes.
This is the best sushi in all of Texas.
A waitress in geisha makeup and a kimono brings a tray of sushi.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, try that one. Love that.
Enron rolls. Shark.
Brian chomps his way through a large piece of sushi.
That's good stuff.
Brian arrives home. It's late and the kitchen's in half darkness. Courtney's asleep in a chair. Brian takes a jar from a cupboard. The lid drops onto the work surface and Courtney stirs.
I was worried.
I was working.
Poor baby. You must be starved. Let me heat you up some chili.
She goes to the fridge and takes out a small pan. Brian sits on the table.
Come
here. He draws her towards him and they kiss. She looks at him.
Have you been drinking?
Listen, beautiful. I've been thinking. What do you say we hire us a wedding coordinator?
She stares in surprise.
A wedding coordinator?
Yes, ma'am.
How can we afford that?
Because we got the E.
He grins. April 12, 2001. Enron stock $58.35 rising.
Zara, did you close 45?
45 is closed.
Whoa, guys, heads up. This August coming this way.
Whoa!
A leggy blonde in tight mini and low-cut top.
She was in Playboy?
Now, some of the guys put together a fantasy woman of Enron issue. They picked the 12 hottest women, gave them each their own look.
Hi.
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 Sultrally to Brian.
Hi.
What was that?
She's August because it's the sweatiest.
Enron has a history of making certain hires based exclusively on looks, which would explain all of the ex-strippers around here.
Ex-strippers, come on.
Straight from the stage, the poles are still warm. Look around you.
Another blonde in a low-cut top comes up behind Brian to his desk.
There are more flotation devices here than a 747.
Houston is the birthplace for the breast implant. You know, the real Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I'm sure they're highly qualified, right?
Yeah. Highly qualified.
Good one, crew.
Brian stares across at Miss August, who's seated coquettishly, one leg over the other. He grins lustfully.
River.
Yeah?
You have someone named Courtney on line one?
Right.
He runs off. Greg comes out of his office.
Hey, people. Mr. Welling has requested you close any pending deals no later than Friday at 5 so they can count towards second quarter earnings. All right?
Second quarter earnings, huh?
Yeah, and second quarter bonuses. Since this is Welling's baby, his bonus is based on every deal we make.
Brian looks across to Welling.
Shut your mouth.
At Enron, if you play your cards right, you can leave the table with a lot of chips. Let me show you something. Anne-Marie, where's the rice file?
It's right up there, Liz.
Ken Rice headed our broadband division. Got stock options of more than $76 million. Have you got the white file? Tom White. He scored 14 mil in options in addition to his 5 mil in salary. President Bush called, asked for some advice, then made him Secretary of the Army.
Richard Bias sold to the tune of 10.6 million. Dick Causey cashed out at 13 million. And Rebecca Mark made her mark at 82 million.
Whoa, 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 whoa. And the biggest run of all?
Lou Pai. He headed up Enron Energy Services. He sold a lot of long-term contracts and he pocketed a cool $270 million.
Photos of the men in question.
You gotta be kidding me.
I'm not.
You're the very first call I've gotten since my promotion. Well, temporary promotion, until Ms. Rowe returns from maternity leave. Anyway, how can I help you?
It's not how you can help me, it's how I can help you, Mr.
Fleming. But call me Alan.
Okay, Alan.
Let me tell you a little bit about what we're offering here. We're heading up a bankruptcy risk management plan. See, if Walderson Industries ever goes down, we're there to catch you. We're kind of like a financial safety net. What do you think?
Well, I think it's brilliant, but there's no way I can do it. See, I'm only here temporarily, and I don't want to make any radical decisions. And we're talking about a lot of money here.
Look, I realize you're new, okay? How much money are we talking about here, Al?
Well, for how long?
10-year period.
$50 million.
A $50 million hedge?
So, thanks anyway.
Stop. Alan, don't let this opportunity pass you by, bud.
Yeah, I'm here.
Take a look around you right now. Tell me what you see.
A desk.
Desk. Not just any desk, Alan. That is a desk you deserve to be behind, huh? What happens when Miss Rand comes back from maternity leave?
Ms. Rowe.
Whatever. The fact is, you're back in the cubicle, bro. Unless you do something bold. Unless you do something exciting, something brilliant. You think Enron got to be the big dog by laying Skilling sitting around going, I don't know, it's a little too risky for us. No, they eat risk for breakfast and they crap out monster earnings by lunch. I'm telling you, Alan, you do this for your company. Do this for your shareholders, huh? Do it for yourself, man.
Welling looks on, smiling.
There's no limits except the ones you put on yourself.
Alan Fleming sighs. Everyone on the floor is looking at Brian. Lazari.
You close this deal, it'll be the biggest win our division's done yet.
We're meeting on Friday.
Gruber.
As if signaling my newfound success, Mr. Blue called, inviting me up for a drink on the 50th floor. I was clearly moving up in the world. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Gruber.
Mr. Blue's been temporarily held up, but he asked if you'd wait for him in his office.
Provocatively dressed in a skimpy pink miniskirt and jacket, Mr. Blue's busty PA is another of Enron's blondes. She walks flirtatiously to the door. Brian finds himself in a large, stylish office.
This was it. The Enron dream. But it was all within my grasp.
Brian stares in awe. He starts to walk round the room, hands in his pockets, studying the designer fittings and Mr. Blue's photos.
Photos of his yacht, his Maserati, a hard hat from his days in the field.
He picks up the silver hard hat, looks at it, and puts it on.
It was as if the future was right there, in front of me, ready for the taking.
He sits down at Mr. Blue's sleek glass-topped desk, swiveling the high-backed chair and assuming a position of imagined authority. Behind him, the city of Houston through floor-to-ceiling plate-glass windows.
Mr. Kruver?
Yes, Miss Jim. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Blue called. He apologizes, but he's been detained indefinitely.
Oh.
And we'll need to reschedule.
Okay. Thank you. I'll see myself out.
Mr. Kruver?
The hat.
Oh. Can I?
He removes the hard hat, hands it to Mr. Blue's PA, and hurries out, embarrassed. A sinister-looking security guard in dark glasses hovers. Brian is walking through the underground car park, jacket and attaché case in hand. Miss August appears alongside him and they walk together to their respective cars, Brian stopping to allow her to cut through ahead of him.
Nice car.
She gives a forced smile, looks him up and down briefly, opens the door, then slides into the driver's seat. Brian turns to his 4x4 Cherokee. He watches her as she starts the engine and pulls away. Courtney is waiting by some large glass doors.
I'm sorry, I don't know what could be keeping him. He's usually very punctual.
A black limousine glides past them. Then a swish silver Lexus convertible pulls up. Courtney stares wide-eyed at the car.
Oh my God.
Brian emerges. He hands the valet a banknote.
There you go.
Thank you, sir.
Sorry.
He bounds up the steps.
Whose car is that?
Mr. Marcus, how are you? Liz Perry speaks very highly of you.
One of the many Enron weddings I've done. Everything. Always the best.
The woman leads the way into the building.
Are you insane? You bought that car?
It's the same model that Welling drives.
You're sort of missing my point, Brian. I mean, first you want to get married in the Taj Mahal, and what? Now you buy a car that costs... How much does that car cost? How can we possibly afford all of this?
The ballroom is big enough for 400 guests, a dance floor, and a 5-piece band.
Actually, we were sort of thinking of something a little less...
Pardon me. Will you excuse us for just a second?
Certainly.
Thank you.
She leaves them. Brian turns to Courtney.
Listen, Enron owes billions. All right, you don't see anybody worry. This place is perfect.
Courtney stares at him as he moves off to rejoin the wedding coordinator.
Here is Chairman of the Board, Kenneth Lay, to share quarterly results with the Enron staff, shareholders, and Wall Street.
Stock rises.
Thank you. I want to welcome you all to what's become a tradition, reflecting Enron's deep commitment to full disclosure. Joining us are thousands on the internet and on our video hookups with New York and Los Angeles. As we distribute the report, please welcome CEO Jeff Skilling, who will share some of the highlights.
Jeff Skilling appears at the mic on the video screen.
It's been an exciting time at Enron, particularly in regard to our groundbreaking ventures into virtual assets, commoditizing risks, and creating new markets. So let's take a look, shall we? An 18% increase in earnings, a 20% increase in net income, and a 280% increase in quarterly revenues to $50 billion.
Brian applauds enthusiastically.
The bottom line, this quarter's results were great, and we're confident that our record of growth is sustainable for many years to come.
Everyone grins.
Okay, let's open it up for questions.
Jill Hackett, Frontline. How do you respond to charges that Enron and other energy traders have taken advantage of the California energy crisis?
The problems in California weren't caused by too much deregulation. They were caused by too little. All we've looked to do is create open, competitive, and fair markets where prices are lower and customers get better service. We're the good guys here. We're on the side of the angels.
Hey, Kit Grubman, Highfield Capital. Where's the balance sheet? How can we possibly analyze these numbers without one?
Well, sir, as you're no doubt aware, the SEC doesn't require a balance sheet until we file in 4 weeks. Next question.
You're the only company that can't seem to produce a balance sheet. Now, I suggest you look into that.
Thanks for the advice, asshole.
I couldn't believe my ears. The CEO of one of America's top companies publicly calling a major investor an asshole. Unthinkable. Just prayed it wouldn't affect my meeting at Walderson.
I've run all the numbers. Believe you'll find them quite positive.
Brian grins broadly at Alan Fleming as he hands him a file. Fleming opens it and casts his eye down a page.
Interesting.
Brian waits anxiously.
I've also been running some numbers.
Oh.
Brian's smile disappears as Fleming hands him a large black ring binder. He opens it.
And they're even better than yours.
Fleming smiles. Brian grins and closes the file.
I'll drop the final contract and send it over ASAP.
They get up and shake hands.
Look, I want to thank you for bringing this to me. I mean, I hate to admit it, but, well, I've been kind of floundering here lately, and this will really make a difference. Thanks.
We can rely on Enron.
Brian's in his Lexus, cruising down an urban road.
Yeah, Kruber here.
Kruber, it's Bernie.
Hey, Bernie, listen, if you're calling about what Skilling said, I'm sure he meant to say something else.
Now, that's not why I called. It's about this earnings report. Look, there's definitely some funky stuff going on in here, dude. Just like last year's. Here, Enron entered into transactions with related parties whose general partner's managing member is a senior officer of Enron. What is that supposed to mean?
You know what? The 2000 report came out months ago, okay? And I'm sure if something funky were going on, somebody a lot smarter than you would have already noticed.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Right, I am right. You know why? Because I'm driving a convertible Lexus. Hey, how's your Hyundai working out for you?
I'm
kidding with you.
Brian nods in time to the music as he speeds on. April 20th, 2001, Enron stock $61.95, rising. May 6th, 2001, Enron stock $59.40, falling.
With the Astros dropping another close one to the Padres at Enron Field. In local weather, Houston, we have a problem. That's right, storm clouds are gathering as a warm, moist front comes over the Gulf.
The car doors open for Courtney.
Thank you.
They're in the car park of a private club. Brian and Courtney are both smartly dressed.
Thank you very much.
Brian looks critically at Courtney's black dress.
You sure that's the right dress?
What?
You don't think it's too department store?
As a matter of fact, it is department store. I'm going to assume you said that because your collar's cutting off the oxygen to your head.
I just want to make a good impression, babe, okay? This is the quarterly profit party. A lot of management here, that's all.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll try to keep my belching down to a minimum.
That's...
They stop.
All right, you're right. I'm being a jerk.
These people are very sophisticated, babe.
They stare in amazement at a scene of unrestrained revelry. A scantily clad woman is gyrating on top of a table. A group of men are dancing wildly. A man drinks from a bottle.
I'm not sure if this is the place.
They both remain by the door.
I don't recognize anybody.
Courtney looks down, embarrassed. Miss August passes flirtatiously among the men.
Well, there's Miss August.
Miss August?
Sally August. She's in accounting.
Miss August puts her arm round a man who draws her towards him. They dance tight against each other.
Oh, there's Liz.
He drags Courtney over to her.
Liz!
Hey, who died?
Oh, yeah, I didn't know what to wear. This is my fiancée, Courtney.
Hi, hello.
Courtney glances briefly at the scene around her.
So, is it always like this? For a quarterly profit party, yeah? But it really gets wild at the annual bonus party.
Can I get you girls something to drink?
Another cosmopolitan, please.
Sweetie?
A diet soda?
Brian's taken off his tie and undoes his top button.
Congratulations, I understand you just got married. Is your husband here? Oh, I don't bring him to things like this. He doesn't enjoy them, and frankly, it's better for my career if I come alone. Why's that?
Liz is accosted. Lazari.
So that's Skilling's at this conference in Vegas, right? And he says to the crowd, do you know what the difference is between California and the Titanic? When the Titanic went down, its lights were still on.
Brian makes his way to a bar outside. A pretty blonde-haired woman flirting with some of the men makes a beeline for him. He looks on after her briefly.
Can I get a diet soda, a Jack Straight, and a Cosmopolitan, please? Thank you. Duffy.
Hey, Groove.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. You need a refill?
Yeah, I can do as well. It's like an infomercial for Viagra, isn't it?
Power of Enron. Vodka tonic, please.
LA got divorced. Remarried the secretary, same for Skilling. She still works for Enron, except now she's a corporate secretary pulling down $600,000 a year.
A dark-haired woman sidles up.
Excuse me. Martini.
We're going in.
Yeah.
Back inside, a blonde woman twists and turns on a table to the delight of the male onlookers. Elsewhere, a man slides his way playfully down his female companion's body.
You know, we may be the only guys here still married to our first wives.
I'm not even married yet.
Careful.
Duffy walks away, leaving Brian to stop and stare, seemingly mesmerized by the goings-on around him. Outside with Courtney, he gives a sigh.
I can't believe these are the people you work with. It's like a giant fraternity with an unlimited budget. Max is right.
They're just under an incredible amount of pressure. They just had an unbelievable quarter. They're letting off some steam. They play hard because they work hard. They're no different than me and you.
How's that for a party favor?
Amber St. Pierre and her much older partner emerge from a car.
Hey, y'all. Nice party, isn't it?
She adjusts her dress. Brian eyes her lustfully.
The problem with signs is that sometimes you miss them, no matter how big. Tropical Storm Allison hit Houston, dropping 35 inches of rain in 2 days. And I thought it was a sign I needed a new $700 raincoat. Meanwhile, another storm had hit. This one even bigger than Allison.
Brian emerges from the elevator, drenched from the rain, into a chaotic scene on the trading floor. His colleagues are huddled in groups or rushing around anxiously, looking in disbelief at newspaper reports, talking frantically to each other, or staring dumbstruck at the giant video screen on the wall.
National media has issued an announcement that has shocked all...
To many financial sectors, investors and employees were caught completely off guard by today's event.
World that thrives on stability. Stunning news from one of America's leading companies.
With no hint or warning, analysts are scrambling to make sense of the news from Houston.
The resignation of Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling comes as a complete surprise, leaving Enron without a crucial member of its leadership team and raising concerns over the true reasons behind his sudden departure.
During my time at Enron, I was immensely proud of what we accomplished. We believed that we were changing an industry, creating jobs, helping to resuscitate an ailing energy industry by bringing choice to a monopoly-dominated industry. We were trying to save consumers and small businesses billions of dollars a year. We believed fiercely in what we were doing.
Well, that was his statement that
maybe
was released...
Maybe Lay forced him out. I mean, Skilling's always been a loose cannon.
Are you kidding? Was Skilling's earnings record? You'd have to be a Satan-worshipping transvestite cannibal before Lay would get rid of him. Nah, left on his own.
After 6 months? I mean, what is the guy, 48 years old, and he's the CEO of one of the top companies in America? Doesn't make sense to me.
Brian sloshes his face in a basin.
Yeah, 1,000 shares of Enron right away. Thanks.
Lazari emerges from a cubicle.
What, are you selling already?
No, buying. Man, if you like us at 50, you'll love us at 40.
Brian stops to reflect, staring into the mirror, as Lazari leaves the room. August 16, 2001, Enron stock $36.85, a packed meeting room, Chairman Kenneth Lay.
I want to thank you all for coming. On August 14th, our CEO, Jeff Skilling, resigned for personal reasons. My respect for Jeff knows no bounds.
And while I regret his decision, I accept it. Now it's time to look forward. The board has asked me to once again take on the job of CEO in addition to my regular duties as chairman. And I have agreed.
Surprise.
I agreed because I've never felt better about the prospects for Enron. I agreed because our performance has never been stronger. Our growth has never been more certain. And we have never had a better pool of talent.
Brian looks around the room at his colleagues applauding appreciatively.
Together, we will keep Enron the leading company of America. Of the world.
Everyone's on their feet, a standing ovation for the chairman's decision. He nods with gratitude at their response. Brian smiles broadly at him.
A couple days later, through an interview in Business Week, Lay told Wall Street there were no accounting or trading issues at Enron. There was no other shoe to drop. He thought he had everyone on board, but there was at least one straggler. Sharon Watkins. She worked as a CPA at Enron.
Sharon Watkins is seated at Lay's desk opposite the chairman.
Our accounting may have been a little too aggressive. Booking income based on our own devalued stock, related party transactions, and there's a lot more that I think we should be looking into.
Lay holds his finger to his lips.
Well, I appreciate you bringing these serious accounting concerns to my attention, Ms. Watkins. I will definitely look into them.
Lay rises and nods at her to signal the end of the meeting. She gets to her feet and smiles briefly. Alone, he sits down again and deliberates. Enron stock prices fall to $34.99.
Back on the trading floor, everybody taking a big hit of Lay. And everybody was tripping.
Hey, Brian Kruger.
How much do I have?
Like to invest some money. Enron.
What I got? Four last week, right?
Thank you.
Let's throw down another 8,000.
Hey, you guys gonna buy?
They nod. Anne Marie's at a table on her mobile.
Yes, I'd like to take money from my savings account and invest it in Enron. All of it.
Lay's on the phone at his desk.
That's right. Sell. More of the Enron. Yes. Bring the total up to $16 million for August. Yes.
He puts down the receiver. Houston's illuminated skyscrapers stand out against a purple-orange sky. Brian's at home, seated in front of a flat-screen TV.
Martha Stewart, role model to millions of American women, joined former President Bill Clinton today at a reception in honor of the board.
What a day! Whew. I finally turned my paper into Monroe and...
She stops.
Where did that come from?
You like it?
Local conditions continue.
Like
for the season.
Brian, we already have a perfectly good TV, which we almost never use. Besides, we're trying to save for a wedding.
Relax, all right? We can afford this. Stop thinking so small all the time.
Excuse me?
Paris, London.
I don't want to argue with you.
And now Houston. Here's classic.
Let's go get some sushi.
Sushi?
Yeah.
You hate sushi.
Well, we got reservations at 7:30.
Is that a new watch?
Oh, my God.
Brian, what is going on with you?
What, Courtney?
On a kaleidoscope cruise.
Remember, living well is the best revenge.
September 4, 2001.
You know, I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to find the numbers. I will personally call you back. All right. Brian Kruger here.
Brian, hi. It's Alan Fleming. How are things over there?
Alan, I tell you, it's great. It's excellent. Enron has never been stronger.
So, did Skilling get fired or what?
No, Skilling left for personal reasons, that's all.
That makes me feel a lot better. So, when do you think we'll get the final contract?
Brian is stumped.
Take a look at the P&E on this company.
Alan, hang on 1 second, bud.
James, you want to talk to your supervisor?
Dovey.
Hey, where's the Walderson deal?
Walderson deal? That one's held up in risk control.
Brian turns back to his desk. He looks at a loss for words to offer Alan Fleming.
Alan, let me call you back, bud. I'll call you right back.
In a glass-walled office.
Tillman.
Kruver.
How are you, man?
Good, have a seat.
Thank you.
So, how are things up in bankruptcy? That's actually the assignment I really wanted, but for some reason they turned me down.
Yeah, I didn't, I need to ask you about the Walderson deal. Somebody said it got held up.
Walderson?
Yeah, Walderson Industries.
Walderson.
He swings round and pulls up a file.
Oh, yeah. Listen, don't worry. My boss got a noisy phone call from upstairs yesterday. Signed off on it himself. Thank God.
Why? What do you mean?
Andrew Tillman leans forward.
Well, I thought the valuations were a little inflated. Don't take it personally, though. I mean, everybody does it.
No, I don't understand what you mean. I did these numbers myself. I ran the numbers. I did. These are my numbers. I mean, the planets would have to be aligned perfectly to get these results.
Yeah, well, apparently your boss is anticipating a total galactic shift. That's his signature right there.
Why would Welling change my numbers?
You're kidding, right? Kruber, how do you get rich here? And I don't mean a little bit rich. I mean Lou Pie rich.
Bonuses and stock options.
Bingo. And what are they based those on?
Enron's profits.
Wrong. Actually, they're based on Enron's future profits, which are booked the instant the deal is closed, meaning on a 10-year deal, the exec gets an immediate bonus based on 10 years' worth of estimated future profits. And who actually makes those estimates?
The same exec getting the bonuses and the stock options.
Mm-hmm. Now let's say that, the estimate turns out to be, I don't know, how shall we say, inflated. Does Enron actually go back to the exec and get the stock options and bonuses back? No way.
Boy, there'd be no reason to avoid a risky deal. I don't understand how upper management would allow...
It's because Enron actually used the same estimates in their earning reports, which magically transformed themselves into revenue, which translates directly into higher stock prices for investors.
And higher bonuses and stock option payouts for execs.
Everybody wins.
Andrew sits down and puts on his glasses. Brian reflects. Welling's seated at his desk, Brian opposite him.
Well, Mr. Kruver, your peers have given you very high marks, and you've scored some impressive deals.
Brian grins as Welling scans a report.
We're keeping you on, with a bonus.
Thank you, sir.
Congratulations. You have any questions?
Welling looks up at Brian, who considers for a few moments.
Just one. How the hell can you change my valuations on my deals? When these contracts start going down the toilet, it's gonna be a disaster!
Welling's desk's knocked onto its side and papers are strewn across the floor. Back in reality...
Have any questions?
No, sir.
Welling signs the document in front of him.
Okay, so I wimped out. All right, but there was no way Tillman could be right. I mean, weren't Enron's earnings going up every quarter? And if so many deals were bad, I mean, wouldn't the losses show up on the books? How could we possibly hide that kind of debt from the board of directors, huh? From Wall Street, from the SEC. Plus, it was absurd that Anderson auditors would actually sign off on something so shady, right?
Brian slumped in his chair. The audit team playing ball and watch cartoons. September 5, 2001. Stock price $32.36.
Yeah, sure, Enron stock was down, all right? But that just meant the profits would be even bigger when it came roaring back.
You'll need all the strength you can get to keep up with Enron stock as it continues to rebound. Yoshi here.
Hey, glad you're still there. Brian Kruver.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah, I'd like to put another $5,000 in Enron.
Good luck, man. Well.
Thank you.
Whether it will come out, how it comes out. I see an eruption, sir.
Mr. Blue.
Kruver. Listen, I'm sorry we haven't been able to reschedule our little chat, but things have been rather hectic.
Oh, that's all right.
So, have you decided what you think of Enron?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, it's best company in America.
Well, Kruger, clearly you're slated for great things at Enron. Hello, Blue. Congressman. Yes, well, it's good to hear from you. No, I don't think I have heard it. The lights were still on the Titanic. That's very funny.
Brian listens in.
A fundraiser. When would that be? Sure, that'll work out fine. I have to be in Washington anyway. Talk to the vice president. Sure, we can discuss our energy policy. What's that, sir? Well, truth be told, I think it'll be a good time to sell.
Brian stops short as Mr. Blue and everyone else leave the elevator. He looks shell-shocked as the metal doors close.
Okay. 300 guests at 30 tables, each with the deluxe flower arrangement. Just let me jot all this down.
A glamorous hall.
Brian, this is getting completely out of control.
Well, it's our big day. I just want it to be special.
Honey, it's our wedding. How can it not be special? Don't you remember when we first planned all this?
Yes, I do.
We wanted something small and intimate, romantic.
Right, but that was before.
Before what?
Before everything, Courtney. What? I'm doing this for you.
Okay. 300 guests at 30 tables with a fully stocked open bar and crystal champagne. Nice. Plus appetizers and a four-course meal. We're looking at...
Oh, my God.
Now for the wedding cake. We can go 4, 5, or 6 tier.
She thrusts a leaflet with the options in front of Courtney. On the trading floor, everyone's looking at the giant video screen.
Kruver. It's me, buddy. Look, your boys better have some answers for us this time, all right, dude? This, related parties transaction crap, it's not gonna cut it anymore.
Bernie, it's late. Call me back.
Quarter earnings report. I know y'all are anxious to get to the numbers, so let's just dive right in, shall we? A 26% increase in recurring earnings per share. An increase from $292 million to $393 million in recurring net income. With over $200 million of growth in core wholesale and retail energy businesses.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the best numbers yet.
Yeah. Thank God. We're back. We're really back.
Previously, we're recognizing a one-time non-recurring charge in the third quarter of $1.01 billion.
What'd he say?
Whoa.
Something about 1.01 million? Billion.
Included in these non-recurring charges
said billion.
Losses associated with the early termination of certain structured finance arrangements with a previously disclosed entity, which reduced shareholder equity by $1.2 billion.
I cannot believe Lay tried to sneak that past everyone. I mean, how could a $1 billion loss suddenly pop up, huh? And who was the related party in the related party transactions with the supposed previously disclosed entity?
Fastow.
Everyone studies their morning paper in disbelief.
Fastow. Andrew Fastow, chief financial officer. Turns out he had a bigger role than any of us ever imagined.
The stock falls.
Fastow built his career on the amazing ability to keep debt off the balance sheets. See, when deals go south, debt appears. Enron had two choices. You reveal the debt, which would expose the bad deals of management and lower the stock price, or you hide the debt. Guess what choice we made? Fastow began creating partnerships to conceal the debt. It was win-win until more and more of those inflated deals started crumbling, which caused more and more debt to pop up. Fastow and company created thousands of partnerships to hide the debt, but in the end, it wasn't enough. On October 19th, the Wall Street Journal reported that Fastow was running some of the same partnerships he set up to deal with Enron. Later articles revealed that he personally profited in excess of $30 million.
The audit team studied the Wall Street Journal.
In Rome, Nero fiddled while the city burned. In Texas, people go hunting. Courtney and I were visiting her family's ranch, so that'll give me the rare opportunity to look like a complete idiot in front of my future father-in-law.
That Enron sure has been in the news lately.
Well, it's just temporary, I'm sure. Every company goes through a slump.
Really?
Courtney's brother, Jason.
So what is it you do for them again? I'm hoping to establish a division that commoditizes bankruptcy for Enron as they move into virtual assets. It's groundbreaking work.
What does that mean, virtual assets?
It's an asset that's not tied into any physical plant or product.
Yeah, but what does it mean?
It's like the stock exchange, except instead of investing in companies, you trade in virtual markets of risk, and then Enron...
Courtney's father has stopped Enron to listen to Brian's explanation.
You know, it's really complicated to explain to people that aren't in business, so...
Sorry.
Courtney's dad and brother go.
What's the matter with you?
What? Courtney, it's not my fault if your brother doesn't know what a virtual asset is.
Maybe, but it is your fault that you're turning into a work-obsessed, money-obsessed, self-obsessed virtual ass.
Why are you acting like this? Huh? Is this because I'm trying to give you a nice wedding?
Correction. You're trying to give your Enron bosses a nice wedding. I'm just along for the ride.
Courtney storms off and Brian glances across at her dad, brother, and another guy who stand by a pickup truck watching him. The hunting party trudge through a forest, guns at the ready. Courtney's dad walks beside Brian.
Brian, I don't think you're treating my baby girl too kindly.
No, that hurt.
Courtney's dad and brother go into a thicket.
Things possibly get any worse.
The other guy trips and accidentally shoots Brian. Brian walks through a hospital with a bandage around his arm.
Brian.
Courtney.
Are you all right? What did the doctor say?
I've been hurting like hell for a while. He said there's no permanent damage. You all right?
She looks uneasy and he kisses her.
Come on. See what happens when I take the day off, especially with everything going on. I gotta stop the gift shop. I gotta get a Wall Street Journal.
Brian.
Yeah?
There's something I have to tell you.
No. I know. You didn't mean to say what you said at your dad's place. And you're sorry. But you know what, beautiful? I've already forgotten about it.
That's not what I was gonna say.
What were you gonna say?
I've decided to stay with my folks for a while.
What?
I think we need some time apart.
She heads off tearfully.
Please don't call me. I'll contact you after I've thought through a few things.
Brian turns away, shell-shocked. Enron's stock drops to $20.65.
Enron's stock has dropped 75% in less than a year. The SEC is now questioning several of the transactions, while others are calling for a criminal investigation. The question now is, what did those inside Enron know, and when did they know it?
Kenneth Lay.
These past few days, there's been a great number of stories and rumors about Enron. Some true, many not. I'm here to separate fact from fiction. Now, I'm going to answer some of the questions you've written on the cards that were distributed around the hall at the beginning of this meeting. First question. Mr. Lay, I would like to know...
Lay's hooded eyes flicker up and look around the room.
Are you on crack? That employee is not very happy right now, and that's understandable. I'm not very happy right now. In fact, I'm heartbroken. Enron is not just a company to me. You're not just employees. Enron is my life, my family. And some of you are concerned about college for your kids, mortgage on your homes, your retirement, and for that I am truly sorry. But we're going to get it back. True, we've taken a hit. A big hit, but it's not going to change our mission, which has always been sound. It's not going to change the way we work, which has always been top of the line. It's not going to change who we are, which is the best darn company America's ever seen.
In the audience, Brian watches uncertainly.
This downturn will not change us. It will not stop us. We are not going to let naysayers and rivals bring us down.
Liz and Duffy applaud supportively.
And in particular, I condemn the attacks on Andy Fastow. Andy has my complete support and will remain our CFO.
Lay was still supporting Fastow, even after the Wall Street Journal exposed his cookbooks, his double-dealing. It's like the head of the hen house still supporting the Fox.
We will be back on top, back leading the way into the 21st century. Full steam ahead!
Yeah, beautiful. That's what the captain of the Titanic said right before hitting the iceberg. I needed some air, and I needed some answers.
Brian walks out of the meeting. He goes into Mr. Blue's outer office to find the PA not at her desk. Brian glances around, then opens the door to Blue's office and steps inside. All the furnishing, plants, and decoration have gone, leaving only Mr. Blue's desk, which has been stripped bare. Brian drives his Lexus through the underground car park. He drives underneath the scrolling electronic signs which have now been programmed with different slogans. Enron is greedy. Enron is arrogant. Enron is deceptive. Enron is misleading. Enron is on crack. Brian looks confused and overwhelmed as he drives. October 23rd, 2001. Enron stock down to $19.79. Brian lies blankly on his couch.
Courtney? Yeah, this is Kruger.
He quickly sits up and grabs a pen.
Yes, sir.
He writes.
I'll be right there.
Blue's house is full of...
He was drinking his customary Blue Label scotch. $300 a bottle.
Kruger. Thank you for coming. Now that I've left Enron, and it looks like you and just about everybody else will be leaving too, I think it's time we had our welcome to Enron meeting, don't you? How about a drink?
Oh, no, thank you.
Oh.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Blue smiles and drinks.
Is this your place?
Yeah, it's a bit bleak. And I go to New York for a couple days. My wife took the opportunity to move out. I had three wives leave me. They all said I was married to Enron. And now Enron is leaving me. The Greeks must have a word for that, huh?
But do you really think Enron's leaving? I mean, there could be a merger.
That will never happen, Kruger. Any deal will be contingent upon due diligence. Any due diligence. Hell, any half-assed diligence. We'll dig up can after can of worms. Enron has a lot of worms, Kruger. Enron has billions and billions of worms.
3 weeks ago, Enron was invincible, and now they're facing bankruptcy. I mean, how does that happen?
It's a $25 billion question, isn't it? Who's to blame? Well, obviously, there's Enron management. Greedy bastards. Lay, Skilling, Sutton, Pye, me. Paying ourselves huge bonuses based on phony profits. Selling our stock while we were telling everybody else to buy more. For a measly $52 million a year, Enron bought Arthur Andersen, lock, stock, and General Accounting Standards barrel. The board of directors, they didn't care what management did as long as the stock price kept going up. They were all a part of it. The banks and the brokerage houses and the insurance companies and the analysts and the media and the politicians, they were all on the sidelines cheering us on. Go, Enron, go! Run that stock price up. Alan Greenspan called it irrational exuberance. I call it goddamn greed. Sure, let's go overseas, build some power plants. India and Guatemala and Brazil, a republic of who the hell knows what. We go in, we lowball the bids, we book the deals, we pump up the profits, and we pay the bonuses. There's only one slight problem. No one at Enron really knows what the hell they're doing in that business. It was the globalization of stupidity. That was the real Enron way.
But I don't understand. I mean, Enron reigned, you know, at Harvard, at Goldman Sachs, on the New York Times and Wall Street Journal.
Let me tell you a little story, Kruger. San Juan, Puerto Rico. We lay in miles of gas pipeline through a subsidiary. We do a piss-poor job, of course. Pipes leak. I report the problem to management.
What happened?
I broke the Enron rule. No bad news. No bad news, ever. They transfer my sorry ass the other side of the world. About a year after my report, cracked pipeline causes a gas explosion. 80 people injured. 33 people are killed. The bonuses were paid on time. I cashed my check. System was corrupt almost from the very beginning. It was designed to make people rich. Certain people rich. Based on the price of the stock. Any actual earnings, any real profits for the company. That was a secondary consideration. Just keep the stock price going up.
co-opt the auditors, pay off the sleazeball politicians who dazzle the media and Wall Street. Keep the lie going. Just keep the lie going. And the bonuses and the stock options would keep coming. So who's to blame? Me.
He takes another gulp of scotch.
I was to blame. I'm the guy. Me and the others like me. Cheap, immoral hustlers. Laying, skilling, and no trouble recruiting. From the high ranks of the military. From the Harvard School of Business. From the London School of Economics. Or from Arthur Anderson. Cream of the crop, Groover. Oh, we're the best of the brightest. We're the bad guys. We're the criminals. I don't think it's just this company. There's hundreds of Enrons out there, 1,000. Cooking the books, inflating the earnings, hiding the debt, buying off the watchdogs.
Why are you telling me this?
I'm actually looking forward to prison, Groover.
Brian looks stunned.
Get some rest. Catch up on my reading. Finally lose 50 pounds. I'm all done.
Stocky, white-haired Blue gets up and walks around to Brian.
You'll be going somewhere after Enron. Somewhere.
He slaps a hand on Brian's shoulder.
It's important you take its lessons with you.
Mr. Blue trudges away, leaving Brian looking thoughtful. Courtney, wearing jeans, a red t-shirt and a bandana tied over her head, stands watering a neatly landscaped front garden. Brian's old 4x4 Cherokee pulls up, and Brian, wearing jeans and a dark blue t-shirt, gets out. Courtney looks uncomfortable and turns back to the garden as Brian paces over to her.
Thought I told you I didn't want to see you right now.
Can you just hear me out for a second, please? I grew up, you know, thinking money was everything. And it cost me the most important thing in my life.
Look, Brian, nothing's changed.
I've changed. I called your dad today, and I apologized to him for hurting you.
So, what do you want?
You. It's for you.
Courtney smiles tensely as she fights back her emotions and steps towards Brian. They hug.
I'm sorry.
Brian holds her tightly and lifts her off her feet. Courtney seems about to say something, but stops herself and gently strokes his hair. In the main office, the workforce are killing time. The stock's fallen to $16.41.
One day after expressing his complete support, Layforce fast out to take a leave of absence. They said it was to restore investor trust. It didn't work.
I should have seen it coming.
How could you possibly have seen this coming?
I'm in public relations, remember. I'm not supposed to be fooled.
All right, here we are via satellite. I'm just going to zoom in. Hang on. And voila.
Oh my god. You can't really see Skilling's house from space.
We all paid for it.
Skilling's place? Can you see any of those naked hotties by his pool?
They study the computer.
Skilling had cashed out with over $70 million, while others were losing their savings, their careers, and some even their homes.
Night has fallen.
It turns out, Lazari really did live at Enron.
The office is in darkness as Lazari, tucked up in a sleeping bag, lies sound asleep on the floor. Brian, wearing a pale brown suit, walks towards the Enron building. Outside, reporters surround Amber St. Pierre, the personnel representative.
Okay, okay. Y'all can just quiet down. Just wanted to let y'all know that here at Enron, it's still business as usual. If you have any questions, kindly send them to our PR department by email. Thank you.
Business as usual, huh? The only work getting done was by the shredder. Everywhere else, the deals had all stalled. The phones had stopped ringing.
People queue up to shred documents.
Meanwhile, Enron issued a few corrections, finally admitting that it should have disclosed Fastow's offshore deals, resulting in an additional debt of $2.5 billion. I mean, it sounds like a mistake you make in your checkbook.
Stock's fallen to $8.41. In the office...
90210 quarterback something Bradley. Three letters.
It's a tough one.
Greg.
Morning, troops. Today's assignment, get your resumes in order.
Greg turns and trudges back to his office, leaving Brian, Liz and Duffy looking stunned. Later, they're playing cards and drinking coffee.
Not only am I drowning in debt, and all my savings are gone, all six credit cards are maxed out, and the only thing I have to show for it is a hole in my resume and stock holdings that don't amount to a roll of toilet paper. Single ply.
Duffy smiles.
Oh, that's nothing. I gave up a great job in San Francisco. I moved my family halfway across the country. I just closed on this hugely expensive house. And we all hate Houston.
I got you both beat. Yeah, my savings are gone, and yeah, I've got the expensive new house and car, both of which I'm going to lose because my husband is still out of work after I made him leave his high-paying job in Seattle. But that's not the worst of it.
Brian looks bemused, and Liz pulls down her top a little to show the Enron E tattooed on her breast.
You win.
Yeah, that's right. 5,000 more shares of Enron. Yeah. Hey, if you like us at 10, you're gonna love us at 8.
Lazari strolls off, talking on his mobile. Brian's at his desk.
Yeah.
You bastard. You screwed me.
Alan?
My career. My future. I put it all on the line for this deal. I trusted you. Not Enron. You.
He hangs up.
Alan?
Brian stares solemnly into space, then types on his keyboard, calling Alan back.
Hello?
Alan, it's Brian. Don't hang up.
Why are you calling?
Listen, I got good news. I just checked the file, and nobody at your company signed the final contract. All right, you're off the hook.
What are you talking about? I signed that contract myself.
You never signed the final contract. Understand me?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I do.
Looking relieved, Alan closes his mobile phone. Brian looks over his shoulder at Welling reading a file in his glass-fronted office. He picks up his phone and dials Welling's extension. Welling answers.
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Welling, this is security downstairs. You drive a Lexus, right? I just thought you should know that your car is being repossessed right now.
What? I'm only two payments behind.
Welling hangs up and marches out. Brian nonchalantly holds the telephone receiver against his shoulder as Welling strides past him. Once Welling's out of the way, Brian puts on his jacket and glances around before stepping into the glass-fronted office. Brian frantically searches through an in-tray and some folders on Welling's desk. He tries to open a couple of small cabinets, but they're locked. He opens a larger black cabinet and slides out a drawer full of files. Brian flicks through the files until he finds the document he's looking for, headed Confidential. Brian closes the drawer as Greg glances over from the other office and spots him coming out of Welling's office with the documents. Greg opens his office door and yells out.
Grover!
Brian grimaces nervously and turns back. Greg pauses and seems to relent, nodding for Brian to carry on. Brian strides over to the queue of women at the shredder. One of the women tries to put too much paper in at one go and causes a jam in the machine. Now on the roof of the building, Brian strides briskly over to a railing. He looks around cautiously before taking a paperclip off the documents and tearing them into quarters. Brian looks out over the urban sprawl of Houston, then slings the torn-up documents over the railing.
Well, there it goes. The biggest deal I ever made. Of course, that meant There was just one less victim of Enron.
November 21st, 2001. Enron stock falls to $5.01. Brian heads down a modern spiral staircase to find dark-haired, olive-skinned Anna Marie sitting sobbing on one of the steps. He sits down beside her.
I lost it all. Money I saved for school. 4 years of work. It's gone.
He walks through the car park where a car's being towed away.
On December 2nd, 2001, Enron filed the largest bankruptcy in U.S. history. It was the one thing Enron's bankruptcy division couldn't protect against.
December 3rd, 2001, Enron's stock has fallen to 40 cents. Brian and his colleagues are watching the news in their office as Amber comes in wearing her permanent smile.
All right, y'all, listen up. This is to notify you that, as of right now, you're all laid off.
What?
And you have 30 minutes to clear out. So, bye-bye.
Grinning as ever, Amber gives a little wave and goes, leaving the workforce stunned. Brian smiles in bemusement as he tries to take this in. Employees file out into the forecourt of the vast, futuristic Enron building. A man pushes a stack of boxes on a set of industrial wheels. Other employees carry cases, a desk lamp, and a large potted plant. Reporters take photos of them and try to get interviews. A security man in a black suit and sunglasses watches the employees. A white-haired, middle-aged man sits in his car and wipes a tear from his cheek. Two colleagues hug each other. A blonde-haired man sits, holding his head in his hands, then looks up desolately. Two guys shake hands and part. A young man in a suit and sunglasses lifts a large briefcase into the back of his SUV. A young blonde woman loads things into her vehicle too. A guy sits on his office chair, surrounded by possessions and talking on his mobile. The security man keeps the reporters at bay. Duffy and Liz come out, carrying a few of their bits and pieces. A devastated blonde woman cries.
At the same time it was letting thousands of us go, Enron paid a select 500 to not get laid off, in exchange for agreeing to stay on during the bankruptcy. Total, $55 million on top of their regular salaries. John Laborato, $5 million. Louise Kitchen, $2 million. Jeffrey McMahon, $1.5 million. All the way down to Amber St. Pierre with a bonus of $300,000.
Brian packs his Cherokee.
There are currently 11 federal investigations underway, many with federal charges pending. As I left Enron for the last time, I recalled the words of Abraham Lincoln. Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power. But of course, that wasn't the end.
Brian's jogging.
The story of Enron may never end, due to the reluctance of some to tell the truth. Californians are dealing with almost $40 billion in inflated energy costs, as well as a disclosure of internal Enron memos on manipulating the market. Not only were the lights out, as Skilling liked to joke, schools were closed, hospital services cut, daycare facilities shut down. Life after Enron was difficult for many. Miss Lay lamented everything her and Mr. Lay owned was up for sale. She was speaking from her $7 million high-rise penthouse, in addition to the $26 million they still had in other real estate and stock holdings. Not to mention whatever was left of the $103.6 million in total payments that Ken Lay received from Enron in 2001. But, luckily, Mrs. Lay had a plan. Her own Salvation Armani, peddling leftover antiques. It was called Just Stuff. Made me want to just throw up. However, other Enronites responded more openly to the call for greater disclosure. Dream became reality when Playboy presented the women of Enron, and then Playgirl responded with the men of Enron. Bickers? Well, he left Wall Street and found something a little more secure. Duffy returned his family to San Francisco. Liz found another marketing job. She's managed to put the E behind her. Anna Marie was hoping to start college full-time in a year or two. But of all our team, McClaney lost the most. Yet I have no doubt he'll land on his feet. Even Lazari survived. Sorta.
But you know what? I know I'm gonna love it here at WorldCom.
So what about me? In 8 months, the value of Enron dropped 99%, and so did mine.
By any standard, I was screwed. So why did I feel so lucky?
Courtney.
Hey.
Courtney and I got married in a small ceremony. And Bickers was my best man.
They watch as a crane lifts the giant E from the Enron forecourt.
This was the story of a young knight seduced to the dark side. But he was lucky enough to be seduced back.
Brian and Courtney jog off together along a sun-kissed path surrounded by trees and neatly cut grass.
I'm gonna get you.
ITFC audio description.